Dustin Poirier and Conor, the Notorious McGregor, will settle the score at UFC 264 on Saturday, July 10th, exclusively on ESPN+. After Conor McGregor defeated Poirier in 2014, Poirier evened the score in January, setting up the most highly anticipated rubber match in UFC history. UFC 264 is exclusively available to ESPN Plus subscribers for $69.99, or sign up to get UFC 264 and an ESPN Plus annual plan for $89.98. Visit ESPNPlus.com/MMA Junkie. That's ESPNPLUS.com/MMA Junkie.
Junkie Nation, it's time to roll, baby, on MMA Junkie Radio with Gorgeous George and Go. This is what we do and why we do it, baby. We rollin'!
Covering MMA from all over the world, this is the premier stop for all your combat sports needs. MMA Junkie Radio from the Mandalay Bay Resort and Casino in the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada. The lights are on and the mics are hot. It's time to get your MMA fix, junkies. Take it away, Big John.
Gorgeous George and Goz, are you ready? Junkie Nation, are you ready? Let's get it on.
What's going on, Junkie Nation? Gorgeous George and Goz reporting for duty here on a Monday. Ready to talk some mixed martial arts with you. Matt Brown will be a guest of ours today. He got a win this past Saturday. The old man did it, 40 years old, knocking out Diego Lima. He'll be on later on the show. Of course, we're going to discuss PFL 2021 Week 5. Heavyweights and welterweights were in action. We'll give you the latest there. Some have already qualified for their playoffs in those respective divisions. Four per division, remember, this year. And UFC on ESPN 25, talk about that. Oh, show. Korean Zombie, that guy. He takes out Dan Ige. I thought Dan Ige, it was his time. He was going to come through. He almost did put on quite a furious pace at the beginning of round five, but it was the Korean Zombie's night. We got to give him a round of applause because that guy's been doing it for a while, man, and he keeps getting better. It was a great fight for both guys. So we'll talk about that when we come back. MMA Junkie Radio on a Monday, June 21st.
Dustin Poirier and Conor, the Notorious McGregor, will settle the score at UFC 264 on Saturday, July 10th, exclusively on ESPN+. After Conor McGregor defeated Poirier in 2014, Poirier evened the score in January, setting up the most highly anticipated rubber match in UFC history. UFC 264 is exclusively available to ESPN Plus subscribers for $69.99, or sign up to get UFC 264 and an ESPN Plus annual plan for $89.98. Visit ESPNPlus.com/MMA Junkie.
All right, folks, just a quick announcement here. It's a rough day for us. We lost our dog. So we're going to try and power through today's show, but there might be some moments of this. I can't lie. We'll start with PFL, Goz.
You want to take a second? I mean, guys, like, you have to understand this is we've never done a show without Max. So it's pretty rough. But I think the motto of the show has always been, the show must go on. We've always done that. Yeah. And so we couldn't stop today, but this house is full of reminders. You know, it's like you have a routine every day for 17 years and it changes, you know, like this morning I'm wondering, why'd I wake up at 6, you know, just to take the dog out? know, my little routine that I realized isn't really my routine. It's his routine. So it's tough.
Almost 15 years. He almost made it to 18. His birthday was in October. We've been doing the show for 14 and a half years. No, actually 14 and a fourth. It was 14 in April. So 14th and about a fourth of another year. And there's an overlap. We've had Max since 2003. The show started in 2007. But he was part of our routine. He's usually at the feet of either one of us right now. And behind the scenes, you know, there's a lot of times where Ghost would put the big screen and I had sent him a code that I'd write him something like that. Fool, Max needs to go outside because he'd come down. And even though we had taken him out to go pee, he had to go pee again, you know. So he put himself up on the big screen and I'd have to rush over there and open the door and keep an eye on him, you know. And so he was involved in our lives and our show. He was the official mascot.
Yeah, it's, you know, I think roughly we knew for about, maybe about 3 weeks, we had a feeling something wasn't right. But the thing about our dog is he always battled back. Oh, you know, even when like doctors would say, oh, it's this guy can't live that long, like he completely exceeded their expectations to the point that our own vet, who you guys have, he's a buddy of ours now, and he's been here for sportscasters and stuff. He would jokingly tell people, you know, the technicians and other doctors, that every time they would come up with something, he would say, nobody tells Max what to do. And he just defies the odds over and over. But in the end, it was his liver and
pancreas and kidneys. It was the 1-2-3 shot, man. It came out of nowhere. And, you know, like I said, most of the time he pulls through. He's fought the pancreas for a while. We've tightened up his diet over the years. He used to have skin issues. There's been a lot of things, you know. He hasn't been perfect health the whole ride, you know. But we've gone to the vet and he's powered through, you know. He used to have skin allergies. We used to have him on a little steroid for a while to battle that. I think that's when he became a little bit more of a rageful dog. Cute, but rageful, like in the sense that he kind of was a pack leader for a while. Because I could put my hand in his mouth when he was younger, up to no, you know, no big deal. But once he started getting a little bit, believe it or not, folks, the roid rage works for pets too. And he got me a few times, you know. I got a couple scars. But then we phased him out of that. We found other stuff. And, you know, his walks were always key. We tightened up his diet. And I think that's why he was with us for so long. He's had good genes. He was a good dog. He was well-loved. He was exercised. But, yeah, I mean, the reality is it's a long time. And those are vital organs. And the suffering was starting to commence, you know, and that, folks, in addition to, you know, when he would go and drink or eat, his hips would give out. Started to get to be too much.
Yeah, so, you know, we had a little technical difficulty here to start the show, but basically what we, for the live audience, the recorded part's going to be fine, but just to fill everybody in, you know, our Jack Russell Terrier, Max, passed away. And that's what we're talking about right now. You know, it's tough to get through the show. Very, very tough.
You mean I got to read all this again?
I'll do it. But, you know, like we said, we have a routine that we're used to. Every show we've ever done, Max was on this planet. And it's a tough one, but this is what people do in our industry. We keep going. So we're going to try our best to get through it. But it's been rough.
So listen, we might dart in and out. try to keep it more to social media and keep the show as professional as we can. But he was a part of the show. He was official mascot of Junkie Radio. There's a fathead cutout that we would have above him, above our studio, and we had that for a while. His cutout had a presence at Mandalay Bay. He had an old tag radio shirt he would wear from time to time. We have a lot of pics with fighters and Max. A lot of our listeners have taken pics with Max. He's just a guy that defied the odds for almost 18 years.
It's hard to explain because he didn't really like act like a dog. That makes sense. He was more like a cartoon character or like a person, really, in the way he would act and the things he would do. The same things that we would do as humans, you know. If I told you, you can't have this, you can't eat this, what would you do? You would hide it under your pillow or something, right? Max would do the same shit if we told him, hey, you can't have this, you can't do that. He would grab it and he would hide it. He was very, very smart.
And tontus,
yeah. Like,
you know, the United States has this policy where we don't negotiate with terrorists. And, of course, Ghost and I are proud Americans, but we had to break that. We had to negotiate with our Jack Russell terrorist, who he would snag our socks or maybe some food that was left behind. Anything that he thought he could play with, you know. And if you acted like you really wanted it back, he would take it. And so we'd have to actually go and get a treat and negotiate with him. We'd let it go. It was kind of funny. But we've gone through 18 years, so many stages of the dog. And look, I know everybody has a pet out there, or most people do, and to you, yours are special. But just humor us for the next hour and realize that for us, this guy was the greatest.
Yeah. Rough show today, but, you know, we'll get through it. And I'm going to make my little man the coolest tribute video you can imagine. I did one for his sister, Jackie, who was a rescue, passed away before him. And I'm going to do one for him. But I appreciate everyone that reached out and social media. I mean, I think Max outshined a lot of fathers, and very cool responses that we got. And I also want to shout out his vet, DJ, and the hospital that he was at, Durango Animal Hospital. They were amazing. Just, he came in on his day off to put Max down. That's how much Max meant to him personally. You know, I'm sure that was if he's Tom, that was Jerry, right? Max would come in and they would go at it, but they would find a way to make it work. And yeah, it was a great dog. It was awesome.
Yeah. All right, folks. Well, listen, like I said earlier, we may be repeating ourselves here because we had some technical difficulties. We'll be darting in and out maybe of some Max stories because everything around here is Jack Russell Terrier related. And like I said, he was either usually here on my feet or upstairs with the goes, or, you know, somewhere causing trouble. But yesterday was his last day. This past Thursday, PFL week 5, 2021 week 5 took place. We had the welterweights and the light heavyweights in action. In the main event, we had Gleison Tibau upsetting Rory McDonald, which upset a lot of people, including Rory McDonald. It was a split decision. You would have to really give every conceivable break to Gleison Tibau, in my opinion, if you sat through all 15 minutes and judged the rounds and said, okay, look, you know, where do you have, what's your pendulum say? Who are you giving the round to now? Or would you score more? This jab, this leg kick, this takedown attempt, this sweep, whatever. And maybe you could convince some people, well, you know what? I'll be damned. I think maybe Tibau squeezed it out. But I didn't see it that way. I thought Rory McDonald won. I think he had every reason to be upset. And this has nothing to do with gambling. Usually I come clean and go, all right, there was a parlay involved. But not for me. On this one, I don't believe there was, because McDonald was such a big favorite. If anything, I probably would have done Tibau for funsies, right? But I was like, I just don't think Tibau could beat him. He's mostly been a lightweight, a big one, by the way. But, you know, he was competing at welterweight against the former champ. You know, he was Royce has been a former champ over at Bellator, and he competed for a title at UFC. He's been one of the top welterweights literally for about 15 years. And I just didn't think there was a decline there. And so that's my insight. But I just thought Rory McDonald won. And now, what did this do for the standings? Well, not much. All right. In terms of Rory McDonald, he was safe because he had won in the first round his first time out. And Tibau didn't have enough points to move on, or, you know, it was a decision win. So he got the 3 points, and that's it. But this is where things stand. This playoff is set for the welterweights. Zhao Zaffarino advances. He's got 8 points. Rory McDonald, his sixth stay, and keep him up there. Ray Cooper, advanced with 5 points. And Magomed Karamov advance with 5 points as well. Just missing out, Saida Boussi and Nikolai Aleksakin. Again, Gleason's Tabal's win didn't do enough for him. So the rest of the results had Ray Cooper beating Aleksakin. And I'm going welterweights first. Zhao Zaffarino had defeated Jason Poney. Magomed Karamov had defeated Curtis Milner. Saida Boussi defeated Alexei Konchenko. And so there was a little bit of scoreboard watching there, especially for Magomed Karamov. He kept showing him in a picture-in-picture there his reaction to the fights that were taking place. So that was pretty compelling, in terms of who might be in and who might be out of the playoffs. And he was doing it with a smile, almost knowing like, oh, boy, I could be out. And granted, he didn't fight the first time, so he got his 5 points from just one fight. But I think PFL will be pleased with the fighters that advanced, and especially since the former champs there, Ray Cooper and Rory McDonald, are highly prized free agent signing. Magomed Karamov is one of their beasts over the past few years as well, and he's squeezed in. So now the playoffs have Zhao Zaffarino against Magomed Karamov, Rory McDonald against Ray Cooper. So those will take place in that little bubble they're setting up down in Florida. It's not really a bubble, but that's just kind of where they'll be stationed when they do their playoffs out there. I believe it's in August. So in the light heavyweight division, Ghost, do you have any comments on the welterweight action that you saw in the Rory fight? Were you pretty upset as well with that decision?
I'll put it to you this way. I left the room before the decision was read because I thought it was very, very clear Rory McDonald won. I have to tell you this. I didn't even know he lost until about an hour and a half after, where I went on Twitter and I was like, what? I couldn't believe it. I think Gleason had moments, but I don't think it was enough to win rounds. I thought Rory did enough to control that whole situation. So that was very odd to me. But you can't argue the fact that wasn't the best Rory McDonald we've seen. It was probably one of the better versions of Gleason Tibau. He had a good strategy.
To his credit, he went for it in round three. But so it's not like he, a lot of times there's a lot of guys and gals that just put it in a cruise control sometimes, and even when there's urgency involved. And they accept the decision losses, even if it's a split, and it's almost like the identity that they create. Jorge Masvidal has been very, very honest about the fact that he had a certain strategy where he felt like his hands are better than yours, and he's going to wait for opportunities by using a lot of traps and feints and allowing you to swing big and miss, and he would counter. He really used to like to counter a lot. Except in MMA, there's obviously other strikes involved, sometimes that takedown at the very end, and he was finding himself on the losing end of a lot of split decisions, and then he decided, I'm going to start taking charge and going for it, Like Dan Ige, in round five of his fight, he kind of went for it. He got taken down towards the end, and that could have cost him, and more on that later, but there's a lot of fighters that if you look, and they'll have like 10 records and maybe 25 wins, and you'll usually see that a lot of them were split decisions, close decisions. And it was because they just didn't have that gear. And Gleason found that gear at times, throughout the fight. Because, again, the point system, I think, tells them that. Now, once the fight starts, you probably forget half of that stuff. You might be semi-concussed, or you just might be in flight or fight, not really paying attention, just kind of going off instincts. And then maybe when you get sat down in between rounds, you're told a bunch of stuff over 60 seconds and you grasp maybe five. And one of them's like, don't forget, you got to finish or you don't make it to the playoffs. And in the playoffs, you win $1 million if you can go all the way. Okay, yeah, you know, next thing you know, you're firing off. But I still thought Rory McDonald did enough to win that fight. And that's that, you know. He's in the playoffs. It didn't mess him up. Although I was hoping more for a McDonald-Cooper final, and now we get the semifinal.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you're Rory McDonald, you can be upset about what happened, but you need to turn the page fast and figure out why it happened, you know, and start making some adjustments because you can't get that far if you're gonna be pushed to the limits now. It's only gonna get worse, you know. And his body's got to heal a little bit, and we know that. Roy's had a little bit of trouble with that throughout his career. So he needs to get things back on track. But as far as PFL's concerned, they have to be pretty happy as far as what the I know they've had issues with some of their big signings, but the results and the buzz generated has been really good for them. And, you know, here we are. We're talking about it. I'm kind of more excited to talk about it than I am UFC cards or Bellator cards lately. So it's been a lot of fun, and definitely kudos to them.
It's found its own way to become interesting, and that's good because the UFC just cast a big shadow over the sport. You know, they have an incredible reach. Their events are, you know, they very captivating, you know, like the celebs, the other athletes from other sports tune in. There's all these specials that are dedicated pre and post fight, especially those pay-per-views. Those things are out of the ballpark. And so Bellator and PFL have a long way to go to catch a UFC pay-per-view, maybe the occasional big ESPN show, which used to be known as the shows on Big Fox, you know. But I think you can find a lot of fans coming out of a weekend after a good Bellator, a good PFL going, you know, that I found that one more interesting than this ESPN Plus fight night, you know, that the UFC had. The UFC also has a lot of characters, mainly Dana White, that, you know, but the announced teams, even the matchmakers, the ring card girl, the MC of the night, Bruce Buffer, Joe Martinez, they really do have a lot of people that just have like these big followings, and they pull a lot of people in. And so special moments can be created just like that in the UFC. And I think they take a lot longer to be created in Bellator or PFL. But that's why the UFC is a monster. But Goz is right, Thursday night was fun, you know. It was fun because of everything that was unfolding, and just knowing that one guy, Karamov, they kept showing him off. Magomed Karamov, they kept showing him, and he kept like, ooh, you know, wincing because he knew that once he got out of round one, he was in the clear of getting eliminated. Once he got out of round two, well, what were the tiebreakers, you know? And then once the fight went into round three, it was like, oof, that deal. But so, you know, that was, like I said, it was different and it was interesting. And, you know, in that regard, PFL's done well.
The thing about the UFC, too, though, you have to remember, though, is they do have those moments, but they have so many of them that you kind of forget about what just happened. Like, the staying power is a little tough. As where these other organizations, they have a little bit more lasting power, I think, on some of the performances. But it's kind of what if you're an MMA fan, it's kind of what you just need. You know, you need a little bit of everything. And there's a point system over at PFL, right? A season. Bellator has their Grand Prix, right? The UFC is kind of the machine that just keeps going. And even one championship is always trying new things. So, and you have your Invictus. Like, I guess maybe if you're going to be an MMA fan, you need this type of scheme, this type of format in your life. I guess if you were to get the same thing over and over, it might just become forgettable.
Right. And going back to an interview that Goz and I did about a week and a half ago with Christian Lee, we had a good, mature conversation. And actually, I didn't even have to push back on Christian on a certain part where I almost felt hypocritical in the sense that I'm always saying whoever's rightfully winning and earning their spots should fight for titles. That's really the way it should work. I've also come to accept that this is a business. And the promotions are oftentimes going to make decisions based on that, even if it means screwing over fighters or potential fights that are out there. But I've just kind of become callous to it, numb to it. And then I fight back when I can, you know. But what are you going to do? You know, if the fight's made, I mean, what are you going to sit there, bitch and whine and cry, you know, the whole 8 weeks? You know, the fight's announced on April 1, and they're fighting on July 1. So you can maybe cry from April 1 till April 7 and go, what the fuck? What are they thinking? Why'd they do that? You know, and then eventually you just go, well, here we are. It's July 1st. How about that fight? But, you know, with Christian Lee, at the very end, he gave an opening as to why, you know, maybe he sees why one championship would have him fight Eddie Alvarez, who has, you know, is coming off a loss and a no contest, you know, but he's Eddie Alvarez, and Eddie Alvarez might make Christian Lee even bigger because Christian Lee's starting to become that name that's more recognized now. Of the full lightweight champs, he might be number two. You know, no offense to Patricio Freire, but he hasn't even dabbled at 55 in the last few years. I know he's badass. He's in a Grand Prix final as a featherweight. And Natan Schultz, you know, I don't even think he advanced. Did he? I got to go back and look at the standings, but he's a two-time champ at PFL and in lightweight division. Yeah, he didn't advance this time. Wait, I'm looking at lightweight.
I think they needed that stuff, though. They needed some of those top dogs to get challenged.
He didn't advance. He's still in play. I knew that. That's why I was unsure of what I was saying. Him and Pettis are still in play. Roush Manfio and Alexander Martinez are above them, but they're still in play. But okay, but Lee now has a few title defenses, three if I'm not mistaken. And Charlie Olives is the new champ at UFC, who hasn't distinguished himself, you know, other than beating Michael Chandler. He at the same time is getting his ass kicked by Michael Chandler. You know, he's yet to distinguish himself with title defenses, whereas with Habib, he was the out and out clear number one lightweight. So, you know, Christian Lee doesn't need as much help as he did before, but this would be huge for him and the promotion. And sometimes you realize that that's just the case.
Yeah. No, man. I mean, when it comes to PFL, I don't want to see the same guys win every year, right? Because then it means they're either great or they're not being pushed. You know, the PFL is not doing a good job of pushing competition. And this year, it seemed like that was one of their goals, was to really put somebody in those divisions to challenge guys like Lance Palmer or Natan Schultz. Like, I think it worked out. I think it's better this way.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. The light heavyweight division, let me go through that really quick. That one featured Emiliano Sordi in a draw against Dan Spahn. Chris Camozzi defeated Cesar Fajeda. Antonio Carlos Jr. and Vinny Magalhães ended in a no contest due to a groin strike. Corey Hendricks defeated Martin Nielsen. Tom Lawler defeated Jordan Young, and it looks like he retired because he left his gloves behind. Although when he left them at the time, he still had a shot at getting into the playoffs. Now, let me update you as to what happened in the light heavyweight division. They're all set. Unfortunately, Tom Lawler did not make it to the playoffs. I believe the retirement will not stand. He does have pro wrestling to fall back on. I believe he does it very well, too. But your finalist here is Antonio Carlos Jr. with 7 points, Cesar Fajeda with 6, Martin Hamlet with 5, and Emiliano Sordi with 4. I was really, really pushing for I wanted Chris Camozzi to get in there. He wound up with 3 points. He only had the one win, and Corey Hendricks lost out due to tiebreaker. He had 4 points to match the other guys down below. So they're set. Welterweight still needs to be welterweight set as well. And we're waiting on lightweight is one of the divisions that needs to be figured out. Featherweight has one position, and that's Shaman Moraes hanging on to the fourth spot. Lance Palmer and Movlid Kabulayev will try and fight to get in there.
But you look at some of their stars and then some of their free agent signings that didn't pan out, maybe you could say. But you can also look at guys that have stepped up this year, right? Like a Brendan Lochman, right? Don't you feel like maybe you're creating a star there, right? A Clay Collard, right? Like these tough guys that have kind of risen. And even when you look at what Clarissa Shields did in her fight, right? Like these little boosts, these pushes that PFL gets from those moments, I mean, that's what you pay that money for. So it's I've had a lot of fun, really. I've had a lot of fun covering them.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so Bellator was off this week. Let's talk about UFC on ESPN 25. Let me give you all the results, and then we'll circle back. Starting with Chan Sung Jung defeated Dan Ige in the main event. Unanimous decision, 48-47 and 2 49-46s. Sergey Spivak defeated Alexei Olenek via decision there. Marlon Vera defeated Davey Grant. I almost said Davey Grant the same way Dan Tom says it in his breakdowns. Mm-hmm. Seung-Woo Choi defeated Julian Arosa. Bruno Silva defeated Wellington Herman. Matt Brown, who will be a guest of ours in a few minutes, he defeated Diego Lima. Nikolai Negumaranu defeated Alexa Kamer via split decision there. Erna Jandaroba defeated Kanako Murata. Chaos Williams defeated Matthew Semelsberger. Josh Parisian defeated Roque Martinez. Rick Glenn defeated Joaquin Silva. Casey O'Neill defeated Laura Procopio. The bonuses went to Marlon Vera and Davey Grant for fight of the night. Well deserved. And Seung-Woo Choi and Matt Brown for performance of the night. And that kind of works for me. I mean, I thought Rick Glenn had a nice one. And Jandaroba broke Murata's arm. At least it looked that way to me. But what are you going to do? They, you know, there's only two left. And the other guys did have one hell of a fight. So sometimes people just get squeezed out. Dana White says usually he'll write out some checks. Hopefully he makes up for it a little bit with some of those other fighters. But that was card on Saturday night. Let's talk about the main event, Korean Zombie versus Dan Ige. I want to tie in something I said earlier. There was a suspicion that even though Korean Zombie was kind of winning the fight as a whole, we still judge him every 5 minutes. And there was a chance when Dan Ige, I believe, won round four, that it could be 2-2. And therefore, if he won round five, he may quietly get out of there with a win. And now there was also a strong feeling that it could be 3-1, right? But as it turns out, two of the judges had it 3-1 going into round five, and one had it 2-2 going into round five. When they said 48-47, the first time I was like, wow, because Ige was winning round five early, and had he taken that round down, he would have escaped out of there with a win due to him being, you know, aggressive in round five and going for it. But eventually got taken down, and he didn't seem to have an answer for Korean Zombie's top game. So, again, it didn't play out that way. Only on one judge's scorecard it did. Again, that's why we had that suspicion that it could be this. You just never know with the judges, right? So Korean Zombie won, and you know, it's unanimous, and so I don't know what's next for him, because it's very well established that Brian Ortega is fighting against Alexander Volkanovski in September, and then we have Max Holloway, who's supposed to fight Yair Rodriguez. We're hearing that the fight may get pushed back, but for Holloway, if he wins, he's got to be next. I think that was even more established before the Rodriguez fight, and that's despite being 0-2 against Volkanovski. We got to imagine that if Rodriguez can beat Holloway, he might steal all of his thunder, you know. But people were saying, well, what about the Zombie? Could he fight next? He's fought once before for the world title back in 2013. Might he be next? I don't know. But he says he wants to fight for the title. He feels like he deserves a shot. And so this is where I'll say what I normally say. Get on that fight card, Zombie, because if something happens to the main event, they may go with you, because you can sell. People love your walkout. People love your nickname. People love your fighting style.
I think if we go back to the fight, Korean Zombie had a great strategy and he fought really well. The problem with Korean Zombie is not, nobody expects him not to show up to a fight. I mean, he's always going to be tough. What we need from him is consistency, and he needs to build off of this fight. I don't think it's enough to get him a title shot. In fact, I think he needs one, maybe even two more before he can get put in that spot. There's just kind of like a little bit of a clutter in that situation. Now, like you said, he could step in at any moment because of, just look what happened in the Holloway fight, right? Like, it got split up. He could step in different moments and maybe cut that from 2-1, from 1-0, who knows? But in that fight, I thought he had a great strategy, and I think Dan Ige had a lot of mental problems in that fight. I felt like he had problems closing the distance, and I think his attack was just the Korean Zombie knew what was coming. You know, you could tell because Dan was kind of throwing the same stuff, and he just wasn't really changing things up. I think he was headhunting early on, and then from there, it was just kind of trying to play catch up. And Dan can be so aggressive sometimes, and a lot of times it'll work to his benefit. But sometimes he's too aggressive, and the right calculated fighter will take advantage of it. So there was one round, I think it might have been round two, where he took a little bit of a chance, and somehow Korean Zombie switched it on him, and he ended up on top. And I think that's what won him the round. So with Dan Ige, it's like he's got a lot of physical talents, and for the most part, he does great. But these are just lessons that fighters learn along the way. And sometimes they'll learn it early in their career. Sometimes it takes a long time for them to even realize it. I think Dan might have realized it. We'll look back at the tape and realize it now. And the thing about him is he just seems like the type of guy that makes those corrections. And his coach, Eric Nixick, seems like the guy that demands that things get switched up. And, you know, he's always in the gym, always trying to figure out what the next move is. So I feel like that camp is going to shore things up. And we'll be talking about Dan Ige soon in this title picture. But for right now, Korean Zombie is just sort of in a holding pattern.
He had hurt the Zombie, not just with head strikes, but he started going into the body. And then he started going for a takedown. Initially, I was like, what are you doing? You're hurting him. Keep it up, right? With hands to the, attacking, right? Mm-hmm. But then I remember Dan Ige also, if he gets you down, has a really, really potent ground and pound game. And maybe that he thought that might be the route. Just put him down, maybe attack from a half guard position, you know, and see if he can get the finish that way. But at the same time, I just know that the Zombie's skilled on the ground, and I knew that could, you know, that could flip in any moment. So it'll be interesting the next time we talk to Dan Ige to see what his thoughts are now that he's probably watched it and see if he maybe regrets that. Because I think if he remained standing, it could have got really, really interesting. And folks, we hadn't even gotten to the fifth minute, right? That was still with like 3 minutes left in the third round. Remember last week, Nate Diaz was pretty much handled for 24 minutes, and in the 25th minute, he almost came back and beat Matt Brown. He just ran out of time. So it's just never too late in an MMA fight, especially with 4 ounce gloves, and especially for a killer like Dan Ige. But for Zombie, you know, I think probably his best bet is to get on the same fight card as the champ. Something happens, I think he'd be one of the guys that gets asked to fight. But I don't know what's happening with Zabit Magomedsharipov. I've heard him, you know, there's so many outlets now, you just don't know what's credible. But I've heard a possible retirement, and I've heard no, that's not the case. Josh Emmett, Calvin Kattar, Arnold Allen. There's a lot of killers out there that I think can tie up with Dan Ige or the Korean Zombie if Rodriguez and Holloway's being preserved. And, of course, there's the chasers. You know, Bryce Mitchell's undefeated. Mozart, Evloev is undefeated. Giga Chikadze's 13-2. Edson Barbosa's a name. You know, those guys are chasing these guys down. Chikadze's calling Rodriguez a pussy for not taking the fight. He wants to step in. But again, if Holloway's ready to run soon, the UFC will probably just preserve that fight. But I love that Giga Chikadze's putting the pressure. But that just goes to show you how deep featherweight is, man. It's crazy. It is crazy.
Yeah. No, it's a fun division. I wish those lighter guys got paid more, though. Because don't you – for as much as heavyweights get paid and light heavyweights, how often do we find ourselves talking about them? You're like, really, from day to day on this show and on other shows that I listen to, you're talking about the small guys, man. The small guys are the ones that are making the waves. I think they deserve to get paid more.
Well, right now you got obviously Conor McGregor, a 55er, who gets paid the best. Habib was probably number two. He's retired. Masvidal's probably number three, maybe. Maybe Jones would have an argument. He's at 70, but he started off at 55. But, yeah, 45 is stacked. We always talk about 35 as well. And prior to Conor McGregor, we anticipated it goes. We used to talk about – we would look at the salaries. You know, most of the states release the salaries, and the big The big money used to go to the light heavyweight division, which was the UFC marquee division, until about the time of Brock Lesnar, Junior Dos Santos, Cain Velasquez, you know, and then the heavyweights started cashing big checks, obviously. But we'd always talk about how in boxing, that was the case. But in the 80s, the Four Kings kind of changed that around. Roberto Duran, Sugar Ray Leonard, Marvin Hagler, Thomas Hearns. And they gave a handoff to Julio Cesar Chavez and Oscar De La Hoya. And then they gave a handoff to Manny Pacquiao and Floyd Mayweather. And all those last 10 boxers that I named competed anywhere from like featherweight, which is, I think, where Floyd kind of like left his power. You know, I think that's 126 in boxing. And he had won, he was 26-0 with 21 KOs. And then he just kept moving up. The KOs started going away. But from featherweight, you know, Pacquiao's got, has a start even lighter than that. But featherweight all the way to, you know, 130, which is junior lightweight, and then, or super featherweight. And then you get to 135, which is lightweight, you know, and then 140, which is junior welterweight. And 147 was welterweight. So if you're matching that up, you know, that's kind of flyweight, the boxing featherweight. Lightweight is the same as bantamweight in MMA. And then featherweight is the same as welterweight in boxing. I kind of flip-flopped on there, but I think everyone kept track. Let me do it one more time. In boxing, their featherweight is the same as our flyweight. Their lightweight is the same as our bantamweight. Their welterweight is the same as our featherweight. Then when we get to 55, you match that up with junior middleweight or super welterweight in boxing. That's our version of 55. So, again, all that is Pacquiao, Mayweather, Cesar Chavez,
Canelo.
Canelo Alvarez is now up to middleweight, but yeah, I mean, he started off, you know, going in that direction. And then those four kings that I mentioned as well, you know, as they started to age, it started to go a little bit heavier, but they can command good money. So Conor McGregor comes along, proves that he can do it. Ronda Rousey proved that the women could do it, you know. Can it stay there? I don't know. Maybe Moreno can become pretty huge in Mexico. You know, you have to catch a break in terms of where you're from and what your following is. I think Moreno has an opportunity. The Korean Zombie might have an opportunity too, because South Korea is rich in combat sports and just overall athletics. They do well in the Olympics. You know, I hope it starts to even out as well. Some guys have been able to do it, you know, but consistently across the board, no, not all of them. Usually the bigger checks on average are cashed by the heavyweights and light heavyweights.
Mm-hmm. Shouldn't be that way, though. It shouldn't. I mean, look where the talk is.
If you can draw, you know, get paid. Sergey Spivak and Alexei Oleinik was interesting. Oleinik, as an old man, can still threaten you with his wild hooks. The Ezekiel attempts, whether it's standing on top or on the bottom, he manages to just try and break your hands by lowering his forehead, you know, right into your punches. He's just got a real, real awkward style, but it can be very, very effective at times. Even though the fight went to a decision, I actually enjoyed it. Marlon Vera and Davy Grant was just a battle. Good for Marlon Vera to shake off the loss to Jose Aldo. Julian Rosa's 3-fight win streak comes to an end. Sung Woo Koy defeated him. Bruno Silva and Wellington Turman was kind of interesting, because Wellington Turman was threatening with a back take early on, but Bruno Silva was able to overcome that and come back and win with his own punches. He actually just bah, 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 hit Turman with some punches that kind of had him go out, but with like the stationary head, like he just kind of got hit and it seemed like eyes didn't close, head didn't crumble. He just kind of laid there, but went out. It was kind of a bizarre type of an ending, but it worked. Yeah, it worked. And then Matt Brown, dude, I cannot say enough of this guy. Diego Lima was a slight favorite going in. A lot of the media were saying they thought Diego Lima was going to pull through. I just rode with Matt Brown, who's 9 years older than Diego Lima. And because I know he's always going to bring a fight. He's just got that fight gene in him. And if he can connect, it'll get there. But, wow, I mean, he just put a nice punch on Diego Lima. You know, I don't know. I almost thought he was going to sail off into the sunset because that's almost like the perfect type of ending.
Is he still going to join us? Because I did want to kind of ask him about that. I watched that fight very, very closely. And I think he saw that setup. Like, I think he was waiting to land it. I think he had a feeling that it was going to land the way it all set up. But boy, did he flatten Diego Lima. And I feel so bad for Diego Lima because I honestly think he's a good fighter. Like, I think skill-wise, I think he has a lot of skills. He's just very unlucky. He always, like, he'll have a good performance, and then at the end, something bad will happen to him. Like, I think his career could have definitely gone in a different trajectory.
Well, to answer your question, the plan is for Matt Brown to still join us. He might be running a little bit late, but yeah, he's going to join us. You know, he's teased, I'll fight either Diaz brother, which leads me to believe that he still wants to fight. And again, that's just the moment that went through my head when the punch occurred. You know, like, wow, you could really walk off right here, you know. 50K in your pocket, a beautiful win like that. You cross that line of that number of, you know, turning 40. Like, you've proven a lot, you know. That would be one way to go. But that also could convince him, hey, I still got a lot of pop left. I want to keep going. So sometimes they think one thing on Saturday night, and then when everything wears off, they think something different. So that's why I was excited to talk to him. I believe we're going to talk to him, you know, in a few minutes. Here's some stats from Mike Bond, our stats guy. Brown's 16 victories in the UFC's welterweight competition are tied with Matt Hughes for third most in divisional history, behind George St. Pierre and Neil Magny. Brown's 14 stoppage victories in UFC competition are tied for third most in company history, behind Charles Oliveira and Donald Cerrone. Brown's 14 stoppage victories in the UFC welterweight competition are the most in divisional history. Brown's 12 knockout victories in UFC competition are tied with Vitor Belfort and Derek Lewis for most in company history. Brown's 12 knockout victories in welterweight competition are the most in divisional history. So how about the pans, huh, Mike Brown?
Yeah, dude. I mean, that's pretty crazy. That's a pretty amazing stat. How does Mike Bond do that, by the way? I have no idea how he does that.
Well, for one, he's just good at numbers. But I think one thing that I've learned is he keeps great records. So when it's time to add to it, he basically references Matt Brown and what he did last and just adds to it. It's a matter of establishing your spreadsheets, your you know, you do your research and your data. I'm sure he's collaborated with the people at the UFC and other people that carry those types of numbers. But I think once he's established himself, then what he does is he takes the time to fill in according to, you know, who's on the card and just add data points, I guess, to each fighter. So now when you ask him, Matt Brown, he can pull it out pretty easily. So I'm not trying to discredit him in every way. I don't think he's like a savant. Like, you couldn't ask him at the blackjack table, like, hey, give me Matt Brown stats, and then he would turn around and say that. He might, and if he did, I stand corrected. But I think basically he's just got a really, really great, like, good bookkeeping, record keeping, and then he just adds to it. What I used to ask him was like, dude, doesn't that suck to – research, you know, he'll provide all the Facebook, Instagram, Twitter links to every single fighter. And I just figured he had to kind of update it every time. He says, well, no, he goes, it doesn't really change. He goes, but it's just a matter of just going to the previous card where they were at. And so you already know what the link is. And as long as it works, then there you go. You know, he just starts adding to it. I'm sure he's pretty fast at typing and clicking away and has great speeds on his computer. But yeah, those are really fun when I read them back to fighters. I might do that to Matt Brown in a few minutes.
Yeah, I think he'd like that. Because a lot of times we bring things up to fighters that they don't even know. You know, like records that they have, or it's tough to keep track of that stuff. So yeah, that'd be cool.
How about that Verna Jandiroba, man? She had the arm injury to Murata. You know, I thought Murata had kind of cleared her arm, but when she came out in the next round, her arm, you could tell, was just, you know, I could tell it was broken or dislocated, because the week before I thought Jamal Hill's was definitely broken. It turns out he had no break. So I'm tired of trying to pretend I'm a doctor on fight night, but you can just tell something's obviously out. It's out of place, we'll say, you know. I'm glad they stopped it, but she was just relentless. She was not going to quit. It was the doctor that made her quit. But Vandaroba is very aggressive, you know. I knew Vandaroba, was going to be way better on the feet, but Murata's wrestler, you know, wrestling background in Japan, wrestling in judo. So not that Vandaroba is a fish out of water. I just thought Murata might be able to control her if she can get her down. But Vandaroba had a nice pace and started to put some damage on her. And then, to be fair, she was pretty competent off her back, threatening with those, you know, with those arm bars. I thought Vandaroba kind of gifted a couple of those. I hate it when fighters pull guard. You better be an Abu Dhabi world champion, man, if you're trying that shit. Because most of the time, these fighters know how to defend, pull their arm out, and next thing you know, they're pounding your face. But she was able to do it. You know, it's just, again, with her being dominant in the stand-up, I didn't see the need for her to do it. But she was able to pull it off. And goes, is this the year of the nasty injury or what? Jamal Hill's been flopping around. Chris Weidman, his leg got broken in half. Murata, you know, they stopped the fight because she was out of place. Jacare got his arm broken. This has been a pretty violent year in that regard.
I made a stupid comment, I think, before the Jamal Hill card, where I was saying fighters are just getting so well-rounded now that you don't see too many like triangles or arm bars anymore because they're just so conditioned to work the defense and positioning, not to put themselves in those positions. And then all of a sudden, man, I mean, we just saw like some, and it's funny because you'll like you said, Jacare, he got submitted. You see a guy like Damian Maya, who's a lock most of the time for getting somebody. He couldn't get Bilal Muhammad, you know, like, so it's weird. These submissions are making a little bit more of a comeback, but boy, have they been gruesome. I mean, those Jamal Hill's elbow, I can't get out of my head. Chris Weidman's leg. But how about the recovery on Chris Weidman?
I couldn't believe it because as someone who's gone through a serious injury, you know, I haven't had, I guess, the attention that he's had, the resources. But when you're a world-class athlete, you know, and your body can recover. And when you have people that are constantly, you know, pushing you and the UFC, you know, covering all these different attempts at rehab, then that's great. But yeah, I couldn't believe it when I saw him actually able to do some steps and start some light workouts. That's amazing. I still have trouble going up and downstairs from my torn patellar.
Mm-hmm. No, yeah, that's pretty remarkable.
I'm probably 15 years older than him. And again, he's a world-class athlete. So now that's still a ways away from competing in MMA. You know what I mean? It took Anderson Silva about a good 15, 18 months, I think, to finally get in there.
Well, look at Alex Smith, what he was able to do.
By the way, this is a perfect time to transition to Anderson Silva.
Oh. Hey, we kind of forecasted that a little bit.
Kind of impressive. I'll give you all the credit. You did, because I have a hard time believing that boxers can have the distance closed on them. But, okay, let me throw out the best of Anderson Silva. World-class athlete, great striker, power in his hands, great at gamesmanship, you know, and psychology. And it sounds like he put in the work. But that said, I think the most accurate thing of anything was just that Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. has been a huge disappointment in boxing. You said he's lazy. I think he's not motivated, and he kind of takes things for granted. I mean, he had no problem writing a $100,000 check just for missing a few pounds. He's pretty spoiled, you know, and he lost a split decision to Anderson Silva. We finally got one back. The MMA guy going into their sport, we finally got one back. It was nice to see.
If you look at the history of Anderson Silva, even when he was at the twilight of his career, boxing was something that interests him. You know, he was always calling out Roy Jones Jr. Like, he kind of started this shit, really, when you think about it. And so I knew he was going to take it serious. And I knew he was a bigger guy. You have the complete opposite on the other end, which is Julio Cesar Chavez Jr., who is nothing like that. The guy just collects a paycheck. He really just doesn't care. But if you watch the fight, Anderson Silva didn't look bad. He's actually taunting him at points.
Oh.
You know, he's taunting him. He looked pretty damn good, man. He looked very decent. Like, if this is something that he did at a young age, he could have been really good at this as well. So that, to me, like, something like that was interesting. I would have paid money if I knew every one of these, both guys were going to come out like Frank Mir did, you know, and really give it their all. I would be more interested in these types of fights. But Anderson Silva kind of opens the door up for now. Like, I think people would want to see him do this against another athlete.
Well, he talked about working with the Paul brothers. I don't know if that means opposed to them or working with them and being part of their crew. He says he respects them a lot. Look, I respect their hustle and what they've been able to do with their YouTube channels. And obviously, they do train. They do train in boxing. They have some athletic skills. But I don't think what they've done in boxing is amazing other than get paid. I don't even consider it boxing. I consider it kind of like celebrity boxing, I guess. But it is amazing that they've been able to parlay their YouTube audience and social media following into a paying, you know, a paying customer of combat sports. That I can definitely respect. Their skills as boxers, I mean, come on. Neither one of them's faced an actual boxer with the exception of Logan Paul, who faced Mayweather, I think, kind of cruising. But, you know, that was a fight that wasn't going to give us a winner or a loser. I mean, I guess if it did, then obviously Mayweather was your winner, but it was an exhibition. So he technically doesn't have an L hung on him. He went the distance. He can be proud of that, but there's a big disparity there in weight and weight class. So mm-hmm. I just don't know. I don't know, you know, what to say without sounding like a hater, because I respect their hustle. I thought Anderson Silva could just say, hey, fuck the Paul brothers. Let's fight them. You know, I want to fight one of them. I would have been more into that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I got to give Anderson his props. The dude really took it seriously. He looked pretty good out there despite his age. You know, people forget about his age. The fact that this is a new sport, I thought he did pretty damn good, man. It was interesting.
You think he had any burritos from the lunch trucks?
Had to. Who wouldn't? I missed late weight.
Yeah, you're right. Shout out to Rick Glenn. I tried to give Rick Glenn some love before the fight. He's a former WSOF champ. He defeated Georgie Karakanyan, lost to Lance Palmer, but he does have that major belt. He hadn't fought goes in almost 3 years, and he defeated Joaquin Silva really quick, 37 seconds in round one. So mm-hmm. I want to give him a shout out. He came to our studio once. He was a pretty cool cat.
Yeah, he brought his shirts and everything. It's super cool. Really quick, did you see Chavez Sr.?
No, what happened in that fight?
Okay, so I think that's one of those where, you know, there's no judging or whatever. But it got heated, man. They were hitting each other pretty hard. And at one point, Chavez Sr. took off the headgear. And said, fuck this, take yours off, let's go, you know. And they were just kind of joking around like that. And then even Canelo came out of the audience to corner him halfway through the fight. He looked decent, and he had, like, vintage, you know, that left hook to the body. He was going all out, dude. That was war for him.
Yeah. 50 years old. Can you believe that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what was the result of the fight? Could you tell who won or lost, even though they didn't designate a winner and a loser?
I didn't watch the whole thing, but, they both gave each other pretty decent shots.
Okay. All right. Chaos Williams defeated Matthew Samuelsberg. Those guys really, really hit each other pretty hard, man. I got to admit. So did Roque Martinez and Josh Parisi. And I thought Roque Martinez won that fight. He lost via split decision. kind of rooting for the country of Guam, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But he wasn't able to get it. But like I say, there was some fun fights sprinkled in. And again, that's just the machine, the UFC machine. They can make some of these fights feel so special because of the they create an environment with well-known announcers. You have the highly respected John Anik with two former champions in Cruz and Bisping, well-known ring card girls, well-known UFC Apex now establishing itself, you know. A lot of these guys coming from, you know, camps, so you can see the corners there. And sometimes it's just who's calling your fight, who announced you, who's cornering you, you know, and all of a sudden your stock can just go up just like that. You know, Greg Jackson's in someone's corner or whatever. You're like, oh, shit, oh, okay, I didn't know he was with Jackson. And I believe that's what the UFC can provide, plus all the eyeballs, all the people that watch the UFC, all the other fighters that chime in on the broadcast, all that helps put a young fighter over. And that's why some of those fights on the undercard matter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and people progress so quickly from the undercard to just becoming main card and main eventers. It can literally happen in the span of two or three fights. So everything really does matter.
Yeah, definitely. All right, I think Matt Brown's going to be joining us here in just a sec. He had a huge win over Diego Lima. We've been covering this guy for a long time, ever since he actually lived in Vegas. I'm trying to remember, Goose, but was Matt the one that had someone try to break into his house in Vegas?
That sounds familiar.
Sorry, yeah, I didn't know. Yeah, that was literally like over a decade ago. Oh, it may be the guy that became a pro wrestler. What was his name? Riddle, right? Did Matt Riddle have an incident like that too?
I don't remember that.
You know, you've been doing the show for too long when now you could remember every episode, every guest, and every story. And now I have listeners that remind me of certain street fight stories or interesting stories from behind the scenes. Of what these fighters have shared on our show, which is something I really, really used to get a kick out of. When I was looking at some Max pictures last night, I came across Dustin Poirier doing a Fight Now TV promo for us, you know? And I believe he was in town because he was fighting Max Holloway. And if I'm not mistaken, I think he submitted Max Holloway. They were featherweights. Max Holloway hadn't even become a champion yet, and they were on the undercard of a fight card at Mandalay Bay.
Mm, that's crazy.
In that shows when Dustin Poirier shared with us that he used to mess around with snakes. Not scared of them.
I remember.
He's not scared of them one bit. And now Poirier is arguably going to be fighting in the biggest fight of 2021. Don't be shocked, folks, that this one can maybe get near the record of 2.4 million buys. That one's held by Conor McGregor and Khabib Nurmagomedov. Now, that's quite a ways to go from, you know, anything prior to that was 1.65 million McGregor and Diaz to 1.6 million Lesnar versus Mir, 1.5 million McGregor versus Diaz 1. I believe McGregor versus Alvarez had 1.3 or 1.2 million. So from there to 2.4 is anywhere from 800,000 to 1.2 million. That takes some sort of special rivalry. Things are heating up, but not really there yet. McGregor recently said, whoever goes for the takedown's a bitch. Did you kind of see that little tweet about a week ago?
Yeah.
So I guess he's starting to – he's the one starting things off a little bit.
Yeah, it's just mind games. No?
What do you think Poirier's play should be? Just remind him of what happened in the last fight. Stay cool as he always is. What do you think?
I think he should try and get back into his head a little bit. You know, there's plenty of things that you can jab at. And I think he should work on that. Not just be a nice guy and just kind of brush it off. I think he should turn into a little bit of a gangster as well.
Yeah, I mean, he owns the last win, and it was a KO finish, you know. And I don't know. Do you think the charity thing should just be left to the side? He made good, but not with Dustin's actual charity, but he did give $500,000 of his own money to a charity in Louisiana. Same hometown as Dustin Poirier, just not the Poirier's charity. I kind of didn't like that, honestly. I just felt like, wait, you committed to this one, you know? Like, it's great that you're going to help out those other kids, but you actually got enough money to help out both. But when he did the other one, it was just this little needle, like, that, I don't know. I don't know if it sat too well with me. Like, Dustin calling him out maybe on social media, okay, I get it. Shouldn't have done that maybe, you know? Especially because I think it came unsolicited. Nobody asked him. Like, if he was on our show and we'd say, hey, so what'd you guys do with that 500 grand? You know, did it go far with the project that you were going to apply it to? And then if he goes, well, you know, actually, I don't know if I should say this, but we still haven't gotten, you know, that's kind of, that's somebody asking the question, I guess, you provoking the answer somewhat. But his kind of came out of nowhere. And so maybe I agree with the part where, like, hey, maybe you should have just internally asked. But he did say we kind of tried to make calls and it wasn't happening. So then McGregor writes the check and says, I'm going to do it, but to some other charity. How do you process all that?
I think I wouldn't have said anything. You know, I think you're right. If somebody asks you the question, you do it. But I mean, who knows how much of, like, the panic button was pushed behind the scenes. You know, that we don't know, but you kind of just have to know with that much money on the line, with the type of ego that Conor McGregor has, more than likely something good is not going to come out of this. So to me, if he did that, it was probably a desperation move, and that means that they were probably at that point. But even then, I still probably wouldn't have done it, but I would just keep jabbing him. Honestly, like, don't forget, Conor has an ego too. He has things he needs to protect, and he's had failures. Dustin's part of one of those failures. So the same way Conor does it to him, I think he could hit Conor back with a lot of those, and I think it would actually hurt his ego a bit.
Yeah. Well, we're only a few weeks away. That fight card takes place on July 10th. So we got 9 days left in June, 10 days to begin the month, 19 days a week away, less than 3 weeks. It's going to be a monster, and I heard a lot of people from Junkie Nation are going to be in town, whether you're going to the fight or not. I think people just wanted to get away and come to Vegas. Vegas has definitely been popping, so I'm sure we'll be seeing some of you, during that time, because Goz and I plan on, you know, getting out, especially early in fight week. The earlier, the better, I think. We're probably going to be doing a watch-along, like we have been for the last few years. So as far as fight night, are we going there? Are we covering the event? No, we won't be doing that. But I think we can still get credentialed and go to the press conferences, open workouts, some weigh-ins, just to kind of start shaking off that rust a little bit, something that goes and I've been doing, A, mostly because of the pandemic, and B, I guess lately because of our doggy who was sick, who's no longer with us. But yeah, I mean, this is probably the event to do that. And again, I keep getting different messages from listeners asking about what's going on. As far as your studio, Mandalay Bay, hopefully we'll have some sort of an answer later this week. We had stepped outside of the studio because the hotel was shut down to begin with altogether. And then they had very strict restrictions in coming back. So, we have yet back there and record our first show. Anyway, more on that later. Let's welcome our guest of the day. His name is Matt Brown. He got a huge win this past Saturday when he knocked out Diego Lima. Straight punch. No TKO. It was a KO. It was a punch. And it was a thing of beauty and netted them 50 G's. Coming right back with the immortal Matt Brown. What's up, Matt Brown? How you doing? Welcome back to MMA Junkie Radio.
What's up, guys? Thanks for having me.
Man, thank you. Thank you for a beautiful KO punch on Saturday. You were an underdog. And us Vegas guys, we like to bet. We're not shy about it. So thank you. My parlays, thank you. My pocket, thanks you. Great job, man. And at 40 years old, and I think when an athlete, fights at a certain age, usually 40. Here's what happens, man. I sent you that text about Father Time. If you lose, they go, oh, Father Time got him. And you got to give Father Time the W, and you give the athlete the loss, whether it's Tom Brady, Joe Montana, whoever, anybody that starts to creep up into a certain age, right? But I feel like you guys deserve the win if you come out of there with a win. So you defeated Diego Lima, and you beat Father Time. You went 2-0 and got a bonus.
I like it. I like it. Man, all the people betting on me, I need to start getting percentage of this. I get so many messages. Everybody's like, dude, you won me so much money. I'm like, where's my percentage, man? But yeah, I feel better at 40, man, than I think I have in a long time, to be honest. It's crazy. So I think things are coming together a little better.
Is that just physical or physical and mental as far as feeling better than you have before?
Both. Absolutely.
Because they say fighting is 80% mental on fight night, right? So can you talk about that? You know, as a younger fighter, do you think you're just full of adrenaline and maybe you're trying to do too many other things than really just focused on the task at hand? And as you get older, you have all that experience and you can dial it in and just be cool as a cucumber, find your spots, and then explode.
Yeah, that's exactly it. I think a lot of times when I was younger, I'd come in with a strategy, a game plan. I'd work on it, have everything squared away, perfect, the way it needed to be to have a great training camp. And then I go in there and screw all that, man. I'm just going to swing hard as I can, try to knock this guy. Even, you know, more recently I've done that. But I think this was the first fight where I just felt very, like, gracious to be there and just happy to be there and felt like I was playing a game rather than you know, fighting someone, you know what I mean? Like it was just more of a chess match in my mind. And I was actually thinking out there, setting things up, taking my time, and, you know, led to a good finish. So I'm happy with how it worked. And again, it just excites me more for the future, man.
Because you're so talented. And in addition, you're a tough hombre, a BMF, a fan favorite. Does that sometimes factor into, like, okay, I got to play chess and not just play checkers to please the fans sometimes? You ever find, like, sometimes you can kind of get caught up in that too?
I think so, man. I think that's a very good point, because a lot of times you kind of want to God, how would you say it? Like, you want to be what they expect you to be. You know, like, all these people have these expectations for you, and you don't want to let them down. And yeah, again, that's a little bit where I think, like, I felt like I was playing a game and I was playing my game. And it turned out, you know, I think it was still a pleasing fight, certainly a pleasing knockout, pleasing finish, knockout for the fans. But it's like, you know, every fight doesn't have to be a war. Every fight doesn't have to be a brawl. And I got to go in there and please myself first. So, you know, 40 years old, however many professional fights, and I'm still learning, man.
Matt, I was watching your fight very, very closely. And throughout the fight, I felt like, even up to the ending sequence, it just felt like you knew what you wanted to do. You were just waiting for that right opportunity. Am I right in assessing that closing sequence, it just looked like something that you had come very close to getting before, and it just felt like it was a matter of time, like just the way you were moving, the way you were setting things up. Did you feel any panic? Did you know that was going to happen eventually?
Yes and no. So I knew the right hand would land at some point. I knew that he was going to be open for the right hand. We worked on multiple setups. We worked on multiple ways to get to that. And you know, I tried some other things earlier. You know, and like you said, I was feeling out the different situations, and yeah, so, you know, it just came together at the right place and the right time during the fight. So that's a good little breakdown that you had there, a good observation you had there. Because yeah, that's exactly it, man. That's what I mean when I say I was thinking in there this time. Usually if a fight was going that slow and the guy backing up that much, moving side to side, it would have really frustrated me. Like if you watch any of my past fights where guys would do that and they would kind of try to pick their shots and, you know, it would eventually just frustrate me or make me, you know, just bite down my mouthpiece and say, you know, we got to fight, man. But this time I'm proud of myself, happy in my performance in the sense that I remained patient and believed in the work that I did and that it was going to pay off.
When it comes to coaching in the corner and getting instructions in between rounds, when do you think you absorb that the most, as a younger fighter or as an older fighter, where when you hear their words, it kind of just jives with what you already know versus, you know, I didn't see that, thank you, I'm going to go in and establish, like, what is coaching the most valuable in your career?
I definitely think both. I don't think it's more valuable at one point than another. And it's like I tell all my coaches, or all my athletes, I mean, that I coach, you know, not to expect a lot of words out of me. And they're going to hear a lot of the same things that I repeat during camp. And I sit down with all my coaches before the fight, and we're very clear about the important fundamental strategies that need to be in place for the finer details and to kind of come to fruition, if that makes any sense.
You know, a lot of fighters, because you mentioned the Diaz brothers on Saturday, a lot of fighters who do that get shot down right away, but you got clout. The Diaz brothers will admit that. I know that. You're one of those guys that has put in his time in this sport, and people would love to see that. I'm sure the UFC would like to promote it. Have you heard anything just off that initial reaction, or since then, have you changed your mind and even thought about, like, something else? Because I know that sometimes you guys don't have the clearest mind on fight night. It takes a while to decompress a little.
I haven't heard anything, no. And to be honest, I haven't really thought about it. I'll have time to think about it. I'm going to end up having to take probably the summer off. I just have so much to do with my kids that I'm not going to be able to clear the path for a training camp for the summer. So not even really thinking about it too much right now. I'm sure that I'll talk with Sean Shelby or Dana, you know, pretty soon and kind of go from there. But and in terms of the Diazes, I mean, like anybody would want that fight, you know what I mean? Like whether they think they would win or whether they think they would lose, you know, it's a big fight. And, you know, I got a lot of respect for those guys. And I think it would be a huge fight, the two of us, you know, whichever Diaz it happened to be. And I think it'd be a freaking blast, man. I think we put on a real war. And, you know, it's another one of those guys, like, I know they're not really friendly before they fight you, but, like, I would be totally cool with them and love them before and love them after.
Man, let me rattle off some stats just to close. These are amazing, man, what you've done in your career. These are courtesy of our colleague, Mike Bond. Brown's 16 victories in UFC welterweight competition are tied with Matthews for third most in divisional history behind GSP and Neil Magny, who have 19 and 18 respectively. Brown's 14 stoppage victories in UFC competition are tied for third in company history behind Charles Oliveira and Donald Cerrone, who have 17 and 16 respectively. Brown's 14 stoppage victories in the UFC welterweight competition are the most in divisional history. Brown's 12 knockout victories in UFC competition are tied with Vitor Belfort and Derek Lewis for most in company history. Brown's 12 knockout victories in welterweight competition are the most in divisional history. That's amazing. Did you hear some of them names, man? Jesus, that's some amazing work, brother, over a long time that you've been in the sport.
I appreciate it. And, yeah, those are some great company to be around there with. Spoken with the same names as those guys, and you know, I think it took me longer than it should have. It's only my only thing that I don't like about it. I think I should have had those records a long time ago, but I don't really focus. I talk about this all the time with my athletes, man. Like, it's not about what you've done, It's about what you're going to do. And that's where my mind's at right now. Like, I don't keep none of my belts. Obviously, I don't have a UFC belt, but, you know, like the local belts that I had and trophies from different competitions and all these accolades and stuff. I don't keep none of that around, man. I put it in the storage, and I have no focus whatsoever on what I've done. Don't care at all. I'm sure looking back in a few years, whenever I've retired and look back, I can show that to my kids, and you know, I might even brag about a little bit or something. But I still got big things to do, bigger things than I've done.
Keep making them payments on the storage place, because I don't want you to become part of Storage Wars history, where some knucklehead gets all that stuff you just mentioned for $35.
Storage in my own attic.
Oh, okay. All right. The one that just popped the most was most knockout victories in company history, tied with Vitor Belfort and Derek Lewis. Man, those are some hard hitters, you know, and to be up there, especially with you competing, you know, heck, at least about 75 pounds less than Derek Lewis, and, you know, arguably 20, 30 less than where Vitor did most of his damage. That's legit.
And with all due respect to Vitor, I don't think anybody would argue that he probably had some help along the way. And Derek, I mean, gosh, like you said, the heavyweights, I mean, you're going to have guys with a lot of knockouts at heavyweight. I don't know who would be second place in welterweight. I mean, guys with high finishes, but in terms of knockouts, like, who's number two? Do you guys know off the top of your head or there on the computer or something?
I don't, but I'll text it to you because I'll ask my colleague. He keeps all those records, but you have that.
It might be a Vicente Luque, actually, now that I think about it.
Oh, yeah?
I think he's very close, at least. I might be wrong on that, but I think he's getting up there pretty high. But, my point, I guess, is that I think it's a lot tougher to do in the weight class, which is kind of what you were alluding to, you know, in the 170, 185, 155 range. And obviously probably gets harder as you get lower, but so it's a cool thing, man. It makes me feel good, but again, it's about what I'm going to do, not about what I've done.
Where does this rank amongst your favorite either knockouts or fights? Last question.
Boy, that's a tough question, because I probably felt better in there than I think I have in maybe any other fight. That might have been like the best that I felt overall. So in terms of that, it's certainly one of the top ones. In terms of significance, you know, I've had bigger fights. You know, I've had Robbie Lawler, main event on Fox, Eric Silva, main event. Those would be the top ones. So this one's up there, but not all the way.
You know I said last question, but I got to ask you, how many times do you get pulled aside and do people bring up the Eric Silva fight?
That's probably the most common one for sure. No doubt about it. That's everybody's favorite fight of mine so far.
That was something else, yeah. All right. Well, Matt, thank you for squeezing us in. I'm sure you have a busy day ahead of you. Happy belated Father's Day. Congrats on the win Saturday. Enjoy the bonus. Great job on behalf of Team Over 40. And whatever that next fight is, we'll be here to cover it.
Awesome. Thank you so much, guys.
Thank you. All right. Take care. We'll see you. All right, folks. That's Matt Brown, big winner on Saturday. And that's our show for today. Thank you for hanging with us. I know it was a rough show, especially early on, talking about the passing of our little dog, Max. It won't be the last time you see us break down, because it's a tough one to get over, honestly, and he's everywhere. But he's here, so what can you say? I thought it was all over, guys. I thought the crime was all over, but I guess not. But you want to say anything last in closing before we end the show?
Just that, you know, I think I was very proud of the way he went out. It's hard to describe, but he had this way of kind of like letting you know he's okay. And so I think we kind of owed it to him to show up today and do our job and do it okay, you know, the best that we could. We weren't as strong as he was, but but we did it. So yeah, just want to make sure we dedicate today's show to him.
Yeah, perfectly said. All right, folks. Again, thank you to Matt Brown. We'll see you all obviously throughout the week, but especially on Thursday with another edition of Junkie Radio. And keep an eye out for video franchises like Legend of Legends, Spinning Backlick, Rankings Report. I promise we're going to get Rankings Report going again, but at least you get to see the rankings talked about when we have our posts every week on social media. Please share and follow, retweet. Those help a lot. We've been doing a lot, not just for ourselves, but obviously the whole Junkie team. I think if you're a fan of Junkie Radio, you're a fan of Junkie, the website. And you know what? Even though I say this, and many of you may roll your eyes, get that Junkie app. Because I'll actually talk to people and go, you got the app? And I'll stand there with them and, no, I don't got it. And then I get them to download it. And when they do, they love it. And they'll tell me about it. They'll text me later and go, man, this thing's fabulous. It's free and available on all smartphones and tablets, the MMA Junkie app. Check it out. You'll dig it. You can actually listen to the radio show live and past shows. And you can also get all your latest news. You can check out the rankings, you know, there. So anytime something pops in your head, it's like a little encyclopedia. Anyway, folks, we're going to get on out of here. Enjoy your day and go out there and be a champion.